It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The 30th UN Climate Summit, COP30, wraps up Friday in Brazil, and Wisconsin research is part of the talks.
Governor Evers was a panelist for the U.S. Climate Alliance in Rio de Janeiro earlier this month and said state action on climate change is effective.
Our states will not be deterred from continuing this important work. We will keep advocating solutions to the climate crisis that safeguard Americans' fundamental right to clean air and water, create good-paying jobs, grow the clean energy economy, and make our future healthier and safer.
Now we go to COP30 with Nico Fairbairn, head of partnerships for the state of carbon dioxide removal. This is a collaboration of scientific institutions, which UW-Madison is a part of. Nico is also a panelist at the Climate Summit. We spoke yesterday, and they begin with what it's like being at their first COP.
There's a lot of people. It's very chaotic. My first 48 hours on the ground, I thought I was going to throw up. It was so overwhelming. It's also very hot and humid, and you don't get to be outside for most of the day. You're sort of in this artificially constructed environment with fluorescent lights above your head and a lot of pavilions. It's quite disorienting. You don't know which way is north or south. And like I said, there's just people and chatter everywhere. But it took a little bit of acclimating, and then it becomes fun. You know, a lot of people just rely on waiting in line for coffee at different pavilions, and that coffee helps to put you into a mental state that can kind of go with the flow and handle some of the chaos.
You are a panelist. You are a moderator at some points at COP30. As a representative from Wisconsin, what are you hoping people learn from you?
I am really hoping to elevate these climate solutions and proposed climate solutions under the umbrella of carbon dioxide removal. Carbon dioxide removal is also an acronym, CDR, and it encompasses two large buckets of climate solutions, at least one which many people will be familiar with, conventional CDR. And conventional CDR refers to afforestation and reforestation and forest management. So essentially just growing and replanting trees in a way that is additional to Earth's natural processes to facilitate additional drawdown of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere into biomass, essentially. And so that's the conventional bucket. And then there's a whole bucket of carbon dioxide removal solutions that are called novel CDR. And novel encompasses a much more diverse set of largely engineered solutions that can range from everything like biochar, which is the pyrolysis of organic material to store carbon long term, all the way to things like direct air capture, which are, for lack of a better way of describing it, giant vacuums that suck CO2 out of the atmosphere and filter ambient air to purify a stream of CO2 and then help to store that CO2 durably in geologic storage or long-lived products. That's just a brief scratching the surface, but I also love to plug that there's a suite of marine carbon dioxide removal solutions too, which inherently involve the ocean.
I would imagine from giant vacuums to marine solutions that there are a whole bunch of tech around you that are new and up and coming ways to deal with the climate crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been interesting to exist in this CDR space as my first lens through which I'm experiencing COP for the first time. This is my first time doing COP, which stands for Conference of the Parties. It's an international UN climate negotiations conference where negotiators come together and debate how the Paris Treaty, the Paris Agreement from 2015, should be implemented. This year, they're debating what's called Article 6, which refers to the trading of carbon credits and has high relevance for carbon dioxide removal, which is what I work on. I often wonder how many other discussions are happening that I'm not privy to in other corners of the climate space, because there's so much more, of course, to a global climate response than just CDR.
The president of Brazil's opening remarks were about the surge in climate change denialism. There are also reports of activists who are saying things like, if the world doesn't reduce its fossil fuel dependence, we will, quote, exterminate ourselves. How do you look at these discussions when there is also the crisis around acting now? And what do you make of these types of statements?
Yeah, thank you for this question. It's a really important one. State of CDR, who I work for, is a science-based organization that seeks to be neutral in delivering information about carbon dioxide removal to the climate space and people who make decisions about policy and markets related to the climate. It's important that we have some form of independent information about solutions like CDR, because otherwise we may fall into a trap of over-hyping some technologies while under-appreciating other ones. And there's a lot of business interest to be had in scaling many kinds of climate tech, so I cannot overstate the importance of having independent scientific evidence that can prove and disprove different climate technologies and climate solutions. One of the main points that I always like to ground my presentations and panels in every single time is the idea that the scientific consensus tells us our number one and central priority must remain decarbonizing the global economy through rapid and deep emissions reductions. And then, to whatever extent we cannot reduce our emissions due to sectors that are often labeled hard to abate sectors, we can use climate solutions like carbon dioxide removal to help counteract those emissions.
Nico, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for this update.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Nico Fairbairn is the head of partnerships for the State of Carbon Dioxide Removal, a collaboration of scientific institutions from Europe and the U.S., which UW-Madison is a part of. We reached Nico at COP30 in Brazil. Now to talk more about scrubbing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, we turn to UW-Madison's Greg Nemeth, a professor in the La Follette School of Public Affairs. Ahead of COP30, Nemeth and his colleagues published an insight report for the state of carbon dioxide removal. Greg, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be back on your show.
Before we dive into this report, let's shine a light on COP30. The leaders of China, the U.S., and India are absent from the conference. And these countries, they're the top three contributors to climate change. Can the world continue to reduce its carbon footprint without the U.S. at the table?
Yeah, that's a big question. And if you look just a couple of days ago, we got some data for 2025 that doesn't look so good, that emissions continued to rise by about 1%. And so we all know if we want to stabilize temperatures where we said we would, between 1.5 and 2 degrees, those need to be coming down rapidly. So we have a lot of work to do, but there are good things happening. There's deployment of clean technologies throughout the world, including in the U.S., despite the change in the administration. So there are good things happening, even though there's a lot to talk about at the COP.
There are still big industrial firms that are meeting their long-term climate pledges, it sounds like. Do you see bright spots in industry at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, some of the bright spots are what's happening with electric vehicles and those being deployed around the world. So we have about 20% of new cars around the world are electric, and those can be fueled by clean energy, because also we have solar panels getting deployed very quickly, wind powers there too, and other things for electrification, like heat pumps that we have in Wisconsin. So the technology is moving forward, becoming cheaper and getting rapidly adopted all over the world. That is a bright spot. And I think what we're also seeing is a lot more momentum than we otherwise might have thought, given the rapid change in the administration's priorities from Biden to Trump in terms of abolishing much of the Inflation Reduction Act with the One Big Beautiful Bill. But despite that, if you look in the private sector and see what's happening with investment in clean technology, what consumers are doing, that stuff is moving forward, and it is affected by the change in policy, and that's, we need to be going faster, and the policies are putting a dampening effect, but it's not going away because people care about these outcomes. People have started companies, they've developed expertise, they've developed networks of people, and they want to keep working in this. And so I think you're seeing a lot more movement in clean technology than the policy environment would suggest you would expect. So that's a good thing to see.
I know you always keep an eye on solar development. You write books about solar energy. What role is solar playing at COP30? What do you see happening?
I think solar is a technology that now we're seeing it get deployed faster in the global south than in the global north. And having a COP in kind of a medium income country like Brazil, it's highlighting some of the issues that are of high importance in the global south about getting out of poverty, getting into development, being able to move around and have mobility from transportation. And so now that we have energy systems like solar and wind and cars like electric vehicles that can allow for development and allow the global south to reach the quality of life that a lot of us enjoy in the global north, but have a different pathway and not have it be a pathway of sacrifice, but a pathway of reliable, affordable energy sources and mobility sources. That, I think, is making the discussions at the COP much more viable than they would have been 10 years ago when these technologies were still expensive and not ready for deployment, and especially not ready for deployment in countries with lower incomes. But now they are, and you're seeing what's happening in places like Pakistan for solar and Nepal for electric vehicles. It's really, really dramatic.
And I think that segues nicely into talking about the G20 countries and your report showing that, you know, these are the world's leading rich and developing nations that are not meeting their carbon dioxide removal goals. Where are G20 countries falling short in their goals, according to your report?
Part of the challenge here is that we need to be reducing emissions deeply and rapidly, and things like solar and electric vehicles are really helpful for that. And so that's a big part of the effort that we need to do. But because the main pollutant for climate change, carbon dioxide, stays in the air for centuries, it's so different than traditional pollutants like particulates or sulfur that we've successfully cleaned up. And that's easier because those molecules or particulates get rained out of the atmosphere in a matter of weeks. CO2 stays. So in addition to needing to reduce emissions and putting CO2 in the atmosphere, we need to remove it. And that's where carbon dioxide removal comes into play. It's a variety of ways. Some are chemical, some are based on photosynthesis and crops and trees and soil. So there's a variety of ways to remove CO2. But what we found in that report is that countries are not being clear about how much they're doing to deploy these technologies. And so we need to be scaling them up rapidly to get to the climate targets we need to do and to make these viable technologies across the world. And our concern about looking at countries' plans so far is that there isn't enough transparency. And as a result, their plans for how much carbon removal they'll do in the next 10 years are not very credible. And that's the urgency we'd see in that part of the carbon dioxide removal part. And that's a message that we're bringing to COP.
And scaling up here, you know, you have to scale carbon removal tools so they make a big impact in generations to come, but still have like immediate effects now. Is that a tricky balance?
Yeah, it's a tricky balance. We have some ways to remove CO2 from the atmosphere that are available now and that we do a lot of now. And that's mostly through planting trees. And so for a lot of people would say, well, why don't we just do that? That's familiar. We know how to do that. And the issue is at the scale that we need to do it, we might be able to plant maybe twice as much carbon removal from trees as we're doing currently. So go from about 2 billion tons a year to 4 billion tons a year. But beyond that, we're starting to use too much land for trees that we otherwise use for crops and human habitation, but especially for growing food for people. And so there's a limit to how much we can do with this traditional carbon removal. And so that leads to us doing novel carbon removal, things like using machines that absorb CO2 with chemicals and put the CO2 underneath the ground, or absorb CO2 with photosynthesis and crops and then do combustion and then separate the CO2 and then put that underground. So there's a variety of means to do it. But some of these are pretty early, pretty new, starting out expensive. And so experimenting, deploying pilot projects, seeing how they work, learning and doing that across the world is really important. It's a message that we've been sending repeatedly with our state of carbon dioxide removal, state of the industry reports. And what we're finding with so far the plans is that we don't have enough transparency that that's really happening. So there's some urgency to really get moving on that.
And right, that takes time, it takes investment, it takes careful work with the data and documentation. The report also points to the UK as being the sole country to measure and identify ways that they've been using carbon removal technologies. What is happening in the United Kingdom?
The UK has been a surprising leader, maybe not surprising to some, but it was really considered like a petro state where selling oil and gas was a huge part of their economy. And over the last 10 years, it's really rapidly gotten serious about climate change. They had a Climate Change Act in 2008, which has created these long-term expectations that the UK economy will transition away from fossil fuels, despite it being an important source of wealth to the country. And they've actually been taking actions to reduce their production of fossil fuels. For example, they turned off the last coal-burning power plant in the country just a year ago. And that's dramatic because this is the country where fossil fuels got their start, where the Industrial Revolution started, and coal was at the core of that. And so to see the UK actually stepping up and phasing out a fossil fuel like coal, that's impressive. And they're bringing that momentum to the carbon removal space and having projects and talking about how much they're planning to do in the next 5 and 10 years, and actually thinking about and talking about the policies that'll be necessary to stimulate that much carbon dioxide removal. So we're really at the stage where the world needs to go from vague promises or long-term plans that don't actually have a policy pathway behind it, and start learning from countries like the UK that have set out the paths and the steps that they need to get to their goals. And I think that's what many countries need to do if for us to have this transition that we're talking about and the scale up that you mentioned that does take time and takes intentional investment.
So meanwhile, COP30 ends on the 21st. What are you looking for out of COP30? What are you keeping an eye on?
A few different things. One thing that came up two COPs ago, so 2 years ago, was this notion, an agreement that we would transition away from fossil fuels. That's pretty contentious language because there's a lot of entities, whether it's governments or companies or other interest groups, that have a lot of stake in fossil fuels. And so there's a lot of opposition for that. Hmm. And so one of the things people are looking for at this COP is whether we might go beyond saying the world will transition away and saying when and how we're going to phase out coal, oil, and natural gas. And I think getting language on that would be a huge step forward, especially if there was a year on the point at which we transition away from fossil fuels, because there's really no way to meet climate targets and to keep the climate safe if we're to continue to invest in coal, oil, and natural gas. So that's an important one. I think another one we'll look at is if there's any new investment in climate finance. So there was a pledge several years ago for rich countries to contribute $100 billion a year in investment in developing countries for climate targets. And that'll be interesting about whether we get a new goal, whether it's higher. But similar to what we were talking about before, I don't think it matters so much what the goal is, and more matters whether there's a credible pathway and credible commitments that that finance will be mobilized and actually lead to real projects that make a real difference.
Greg, thank you so much for the insights. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good talking to you today, Kate.
Greg Nemeth is a professor in the UW-Madison La Follette School of Public Affairs. Ahead of COP30, Nemeth and his colleagues put out a report for the State of Carbon Dioxide Removal. That's a collaboration of global scientists. And earlier, we heard from Nico Fairbairn, head of partnerships for the State of Carbon Dioxide Removal. Nico is in Brazil at COP30. The climate summit wraps up Friday.